or good evening, everyone, depending on where you are living, and welcome to Information Week Live for Friday, July 17th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we have a great panel for you today. We've got all the chairs around the table here in the virtual studio are filled, and we hope that the conversation on InformationWeek.com will be full as well. We'd love to have your voice in that conversation. If you're listening live, and we hope you are, remember that all you have to do is type your comment or question into the box labeled your post, then be sure to click on that big red post button under the box. Well, joining me around the virtual table today, we have Kelly Sheridan, Associate Editor at Information Week. Kelly, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
We've also got Sarah Peters, Senior Super Mega Wonderful Editor from Dark Reading, and she who brings all things scary to us in the world of InfoSec. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Delighted to be here, Kurt. Thank you.
And, of course, Dave Wagner, a fellow executive editor at Information Week. Dave, we're looking forward to hearing what interesting things you have come across in the world of IT this week.
Thanks, Kurt, although I think I like Sarah's title better this week.
We'll work on that. We'll work on that. Well, to get us kicked off, you know, what we do here at Information Week Live, we ask all of our participants to come to us bringing their best stories and the things that have caught their eye in the world of IT for the week. And, Kelly, I know that you were on the road this week. Where were you this week and what was going on there?
I was down in Orlando, Florida for Microsoft's Worldwide Partnership Conference. And there was a ton of Microsoft news this week at the partner conference and outside of it. I was there, lucky enough to be there for Tuesday and Wednesday. So while I wasn't there for the first wave of keynotes, I was able to sit in on the second. And earlier in the week, they introduced a whole bunch of announcements on different products and upgrades that they're rolling out later this year. We learned about the Cortana Analytics Suite. So Cortana will get a lot of big data analysis capabilities. And the Office E5 Suite, which brings more capabilities into Office 365 for enterprise purposes. And then later in the week, during the second wave of keynotes, they talked about the relevance of all of these products and the applicability they'll have to Microsoft partners and customers. And I was watching when Chief Operating Officer, his name is Kevin Turner, he outlined Microsoft's sort of like a strategic plan almost for the upcoming fiscal year. And he shared four core priorities. So I thought that was really interesting. He said that first, Microsoft is going to prioritize quote-unquote, owning the cloud through Office 365, through Azure, through CRM Online. And he thinks that that's a huge area of growth, which is something that we've heard from Microsoft all year, you know, prioritizing cloud and mobile. And he also touched on the importance of Windows 10, which he described as the launch will be a seminal moment for Microsoft as a company between the hardware and between the new Windows as a service capabilities. And those are the two focus areas that I thought were really key. But then he said that the other core priorities for their fiscal year 2016 will be competing to win with competitors like Google and Apple, and then trying to boost customer satisfaction, which I think also goes along with Windows 10.
Okay, so now you'll excuse me if I roll my eyes just a little bit at the compete to win, because I think it would be tough to find an executive who said our goal this year is to fall as far behind our competition as possible. but aside from that, I mean, it's obvious that for the remainder of the year, the big thing for Microsoft seems to be getting the Windows 10 launch right. But aside from that, you talked about the pillars and their priorities. Did you get a sense of what comes next on the list of priorities? Aside from Windows 10, was there an obvious runner-up for the hearts and minds of those inside Microsoft?
Well, I could tell you what was in the minds of everyone in the audience, which was what's going on with Microsoft's mobile division, because we've seen so much activity and heard so much news about the disruption that's occurring over there. And he, I think Kevin knew that because he kind of went off on a tangent when he was talking about Windows 10. He said, oh, I know you all know, what you're wondering what's going on with our mobile division. And because back in June, the former Nokia CEO left Microsoft in kind of an executive shakeup, and then Microsoft wrote down $7.6 billion after last year's Nokia acquisition. So everybody's wondering what's going on with the mobile business. And Kevin went on to say that they really do care about phones and that they're not going to be leaving the mobile business, which is the point that he was trying to make. And it was more that they're trying to restructure it so that it will eventually be sustainable. And he said that Microsoft isn't planning on having a range of devices. It's focused on building maybe just a handful of smartphones that it'll try to push to the market. But I think it still remains to be seen whether that'll actually be successful.
Well, based on what you saw, what do you think Microsoft really has going for it? Is Windows 10 kind of sucking all the air out of the room when it comes to them talking about other things? Or do you think Microsoft is going to be successful at convincing different kinds of customers that they have a bunch of equally important things going on?
Well, Windows 10 is important, but it's certainly not everything. Granted, I do think that the new operating system will make a huge difference in Microsoft's future and whether customers will react to it as a newly modern and more relevant company. But I think there are a lot of other offerings that, aside from Windows 10, that could make a difference for Microsoft. And one of those was Office 365. And they went into that on the first day of keynotes. They talked about a new enterprise suite called E5, and that'll release before the end of this calendar year. And that's it'll be designed to retain the core value of Office 365, but add a few new features for business purposes like Skype for Business, Power BI Pro, Delve Organizational Analytics, and different security features like data loss protection and customer lockbox.
All right. Now, I haven't heard anything from our other panel members, so I'm going to turn to you. Dave, I know that mobile is one of the things that you tend to be interested in, and especially those mobile devices that don't have a lowercase letter I in front of them. So, you know, what do you think about Microsoft? From everything that you've seen and heard, is Microsoft going to be able to be a legitimate, significant player in the mobile device market?
I don't know, but this is what I generally do know about mobile, which is that if you put out the right product, an awful lot of people will flock to you very quickly. In my mind, mobile is like the hot club on the strip, right? The kids will flock to wherever it's hot, and when the right people go somewhere else, they follow. And you can't stay hot forever, right? And we saw it with BlackBerry. We saw when Android came in and made Apple not the only game in town. We're even seeing within Android different hot handsets come up. So I don't think it's impossible to imagine that Microsoft could put out a product that suddenly made it the hot club. I don't actually think that that's necessarily likely, but it's not actually, I think, crucial to Microsoft's success. I'm actually far more interested in what Kelly just said about this new suite, because I'm fascinated by the fact of a suite that covers normal traditional business needs like Office 365 and Skype, but also includes analytics and security in the same suite. Because that, to me, is a very interesting grab to say we are still the only relevant voice in the enterprise. So I think they can miss on mobile, but if they hit a home run in the enterprise, they're going to be okay.
All right. And you brought up something there that I want to turn to our other panelist with. Sarah, Microsoft has said that security is part of this whole super suite for the enterprise. We've had a lot going on in the security world in the last few months. I mean, if everything from huge breaches to lots of new vulnerabilities. From where you sit, is Microsoft adding security to the Office 365 suite of products something that's likely to be a legitimate product for strengthening security, or does this smack of just window dressing to you?
It's hard to say as far as Windows 365 itself, but I think where Microsoft is getting some traction is in Azure as a development kind of platform. And it was interesting, something that Kevin Turner said that Kelly quoted in her story was that we need to own the cloud, and that privacy and security was going to be key to getting Microsoft to own the cloud. And they really have made strides in that. I would say that in some regards, they're actually kind of leading the charge, because one of the reasons big organizations and organizations with major security and privacy needs have not moved their data and their production and, you know, their test dev stuff into the cloud at all is because they don't control their encryption keys. And something that they've done recently is create a whole new system so that they put those keys in the hands of the customers. So the reason that that's, I mean, there's several reasons that that's important, but one of the big ones is that if, say, the U.S. government comes along and says, by the way, we would like to peek at so-and-so's data, and we'd like to peek at all that stuff that they have residing on your cloud, Microsoft can just say, well, here you go, here it is, but it's all encrypted, and if you want to be able to actually read it, you're going to go have to talk to the customer and have them decrypt it for you, because we're not able to do that for you anymore. So that is something that is a nice thing for the cloud providers, and is also something that makes customers happy, and it gives those more security-conscious organizations a reason to use the cloud that they didn't have before, or at least it takes away one of the reasons didn't have to use the cloud before. And I do think that that's going to help them going forward.
Okay, now speaking of security-conscious organizations, that's actually a decent segue into some of the stories I think you're likely to want to talk about this week, because we had, for the first time in a long while, what sounded to me like some success in the security world. One of the pits that exists in the dark web was filled up, covered over, flooded, whatever the right analogy is. What went on with this mysterious, nefarious sight out on the web.
Right. Okay. So there was a big sting that happened this week that brought down, it was infiltrated and shut down, this big cybercrime forum called Darkode. Basically, this is a place where criminals go to buy and sell all of their malware and their personally identifiable information that they've stolen, credit cards and passwords and all of that kind of wonderful stuff that they like to buy and sell. This was a really kind of high-end one. There were only about between 250 to 300 members. It was password protected. It was invitation only. There was a whole vetting process in order to be able to use Darkode. So the law enforcement had to get through that whole vetting process to be able to infiltrate it first. And this international collaboration between the Department of Justice, the FBI, and law enforcement in 19 nations finally was able to shut down. So they issued this week charges and arrests and searches of 70 members, including the administrator of Darkode, and they were able to also seize the domain and the servers used by it. It was all called Operation Shrouded Horizon. I love the names that they come up for this program. It's great. And it was cool too because they worked with they've done a few of these before. It really started the first one was just over a year ago with Operation Tovar, when they brought down the Game Over Zeus botnet. It was the first real big sting operation that was an international law enforcement collaboration that went after not even so much the criminals, but their infrastructure. And this is following along in that trend. And it had some nations involved that we haven't done a lot, we, meaning the U.S., haven't done a whole lot of work with. So in addition to the U.K., which we work with plenty, it's also Latvia and Romania and Nigeria and Israel. So the thing is, of course, that this is not going to shut down everything. There are other cybercrime forums out there. The other 200-plus members of Darkode will have other places to do their business. And although the 70 members that they did issue charges for, they're not all of them were arrested, you know, so they're not all in custody. But what this does, since the servers were shut down, it causes a big disruption. It gives law enforcement a few months to kind of catch up. And that oftentimes in cybercrime is that reprieve at least gives them, you know, some time to prevent at least some of the crimes that would have happened during that time. And sometimes they do actually get these guys and put them in prison. So that's nice. So that's what passes for good news in the security world. And I do have plenty of bad news if you want to hear that as well. But that's what we've got for good news this week.
I just want to know how the government could do this and then Reddit can't even get rid of a few trolls and they lose their CEO when they try.
Oh, well, you know, it was also interesting. I knew I was forgetting something. One of the people who was arrested had been an intern at FireEye, which is a very big security company. So that's a little bit embarrassing. This kind of thing does happen from time to time because, of course, the skills that you learn in a security company are very much the same skills that you need to be a virus writer. So there's an overlap, and this is just another piece of evidence for the fact that the white hat skills and black hat skills are often the same, and you just don't know which way these guys are going to go with their careers.
Well, it seems like we've now had, about 45 seconds to revel in good news. Is this a week where there was enough bad news to outweigh the good news, or is this one of those rare weeks when the good news outweighs the bad?
Well, that depends on your perspective. The rest of the news is what I would call subjective. So this kind of is an overlap between things that happened last week and what happened this week. Last week, there was the big breach at Packing Team. Are you guys familiar at all with that? I'll go through it, obviously, but did you hear about it?
I'm not sure that I really heard. If I heard about it, I didn't pay a lot of attention. Can you fill us in on some of the details?
Sure. Okay, so Packing Team is an Italian surveillance, it's a company that sells surveillance software. That's the term they use, but only to government agencies and law enforcement agencies, and they say only to government agencies that are, I guess, respectable, that don't have any major human rights violations to their name. But they have been called out before for not being all of that respectable themselves, because the surveillance software that they sell is really quite similar to what we would think of as malware. It's really a lot like the remote access Trojans that security people are fighting against so often. They're things that have keyloggers on them and monitor, your network traffic and take images of your screen and all of that other kind of stuff, and have rootkits in them and are impossible to get rid of and that kind of a thing. And what happened is that some, let's say a gray hat hacker, hacked Packing Team and stole a lot of their files and did what is called a doxing attack, which just means that they then released publicly all of this information in order to kind of shame or expose Packing Team's practices. And first of all, the way that they were able to do that seems to be that Hacking Team's own internal security was really pretty lax. Some of the passwords they used were like really, really bad passwords that should never be, like really, really bad passwords that even the security administrators should really know not to use, but the security administrators used them. And I think like somebody like the CEO had just password one as their password for every single service. It was really bad stuff. But anyway, so among the files were things like they sold this software not just to the quote-unquote respectable governments, but also to places with very severe human rights violations, according to the United Nations, places like the Sudan and Ethiopia and a lot of places that definitely violated what their own stated terms of their own stated ethics were. So that was the first thing. And then what was also the source code, at least some of the source code for their surveillance tools, was then public, right? So then all the hackers in the world can also have access to it, and then they can tweak it and make it into really, 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 really sophisticated malware that's able to, some of the things it can do is that it can overcome anonymization software. Like one of the things it could do is be able to get around the Tor network. So it's really, really good stuff. And it would cost a lot of money on the black market to buy something like this. And now it's basically for free, and you can, and anybody can get it. They don't need to go on something like the Dark Code Forum to get something like that. It's for everybody who wants it. And then also, there were a whole bunch of zero-day vulnerabilities, also which can go for like $100,000, some of them, on the black market, because those zero-day vulnerabilities were another thing that Hacking Team would sell to government agencies. So suddenly, Adobe was having to patch all of these hugely bad, seriously critical Flash vulnerabilities over the past week. They've had to issue all of these out-of-band flashes vulnerabilities, and it's been a nightmare for Adobe. People have been calling for them to kill Flash for a while now, and now they're getting a lot more dire. Mozilla actually just blocked Flash entirely for a while they were waiting for Adobe to patch those vulnerabilities. We're expecting that there are going to be even more that are found in all of those leaked files. So it's been a real big mess, to say the least. There you go. There's bad news for the week. The good side of it is that, like, oh, well, we really exposed this kind of not-so-great company, and we found out that the FBI and the, you know, we learned a little bit more about government surveillance, but on the bad side, a whole bunch of bad tools in the hands of bad guys, and we're riddled with really bad zero-day vulnerabilities that have already shown up in exploit kits.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, you have successfully harshed our buzz coming out of the good news on the security information for the week. Fortunately, there's always next week, and I'm sure that in the coming days there's going to be nothing but happiness and sunshine in the InfoSec world, especially as we're leading up to something that is as universally loved and respected as Black Hat. So we appreciate you bringing that ray of sunshine to us today. And, well, Dave, I suppose it's up to you to bring things back to the side of the light with your lighthearted and very reassuring story about bacteria that, it could give new meaning to the phrase fast-moving bug.
Yeah, if you're looking for happy news, I may not be the right person to provide it this week. But I feel like, honestly, this is one of the most fascinating stories I have ever written in my career. And hear me out, because I'm going to start off with the really awful news, and then but I'm going to tell you why this is important at the end. The Air Force is funding projects into mind control and to making robots with killer bacteria. And those robots are being controlled by the brain that is being created by this colony of bacteria. So enough basically to make Elon Musk and the other people who fear AI just to roll into a little ball and cry in a little hole.
Now, I've got to ask, were either Arnold Schwarzenegger or Keanu Reeves seen anywhere near the announcement for this?
Fortunately, there has not been an announcement yet, because so far this is just theoretical. But two researchers at Virginia Tech have created the math, which is the hard part, of creating this brain that will be made, and they've tested it in simulation. And what they have created in simulation is a robot, which is run entirely by bacteria, that when it feeds in simulation, it actually behaves like a advanced predator. It is actually the robot will stalk its prey, which in this case is a protein like a lactose or something like that, will stalk its prey. It will take a pause when it gets near it, like a cat or another predator, and then it pounces on it really fast. So what they've created is a robot run by bacteria, bacteria which in some cases makes us very sick, like E. coli. and when combined together with this robot, moves like a predator. So that's the stuff of nightmares. But let me give you the really good reason why this was created. Because the really good reason why this was created might give you even bigger nightmares than the idea of a robot run by bacteria brain. So we have started to realize, basically it's been accepted for the last 5 or so years, that our brain is controlled partially by the bacteria in our own bodies. We are 90% non-human microbes. Only 10% of us is actually us. So, for an example, you're probably pretty aware that there is bacteria in your intestine which breaks down your food. And so the bacteria does that, and you get the nutrients from the food, and then they get basically what is a handling charge, right? And they get to live on in your intestine. Well, here's the fun part. Those bacteria we've discovered are actually communicating with our brain through a nerve called the vagus nerve. And they actually can control our moods and our cravings. So when you're craving that peanut butter and banana sandwich at 3 o'clock in the morning, it might not be because that's actually the best thing to eat, but that's because the bacteria in your body wants it. So this is a really frightening concept. And we have actually seen in a laboratory that some of this bacteria can do things like the bacteria that's in cat feces can actually, if it's inside a rat, will make the rat just roll over and let itself be eaten by the cat. And we're starting to realize that some of this bacteria is causing mental illness in people. There's a huge theory right now going around that schizophrenia is caused by a bacteria. It's possible that autism is caused by it. There are a lot of things going on. So the reason for this robot being invented is so that we can actually create essentially a stable laboratory platform to see how bacteria affects a brain. So in all of this, it might sound really scary to think of a robot being run by a bacteria brain, but it might be even scarier to think about the fact that you, in fact, are a brain controlled by bacteria, and maybe you'll want to know a little bit more about how you're being controlled and what you can do about it.
Now, this is interesting to me because I have a long, long-term relationship with my biota. I've been involved in sort of the animal husbandry project with my biota for most of my life. But I understand that a lot of people are really weirded out about things like this. In my case, I find it kind of reassuring. I never need to feel truly alone, knowing that I carry my own little, you know, cosmos with me wherever I go. Now, Kelly, you've been quiet through a lot of this, but you are an urban professional who is surrounded by millions of people with their trillions of bacteria. So what do you think about all of this? Is it the sort of thing that you keep in the back of your mind all the time, or would you prefer not to know this kind of stuff?
Well, it wasn't in the back of my mind before, but now it is. and while the idea of a robot run by bacteria doesn't necessarily make me want to crawl into a hole, the awareness that I'm now surrounded by millions of people and their bacteria just might. So I'm going to start living in my basement now by myself.
you can't run away from it, Kelly. 90% of you is not you, so you'll still be
outnumbered. Yeah, I think that was the scariest part of your article, Dave, was reading that. in all seriousness, it is it's absolutely terrifying that they're able to do this. But you know, kind of separating myself from that, it's also kind of fascinating that they're able to build a robot that will run on this. And I'm going to have to, like, go and run and, like, inform all my scientist friends that, hey, look, they're building a robot that can run on bacteria. Because even though it's kind of, it's scary in the stuff of science fiction movies, it's also, like, kind of disturbingly cool. So I'm glad that you dove into that, Dave, and wrote an article on it. I actually read it just before this call, and it's equal parts scary and awesome.
I like the concept.
A lot of microbiologists, and the same can be said of them.
Yeah. Well, I pointed out in the article that it's possible that the bacteria told these people to build the robot.
In which case, that's a whole new level of scary, right?
I'm just happy when my bacteria invites me to the committee meetings. Yeah, that's
fair. I mean, I'm saying this in a sort of hyped, sort of fun way, right? There's one thing I say in the article, and I want to just sort of mention to people: is you really are still you, and you have always been you, whether you know this or not. Your thoughts are your thoughts, and some of them are influenced by outside environment and reacting to other people, and some of them are, you know, part of your inside environment, right? I mean, these things are not, nothing changed by reading this article, right?
Right, right.
So no one is saying that, you know, you're completely not you anymore. It's just that we're starting to learn new ways in which our environment is influencing us, and the whole point of creating this robot is so that we can learn when that influence is something we need to intervene on, right? So for instance, if bacteria really is causing schizophrenia, we may be able to create a drug which can turn off that bacteria that's doing that to you, or we may find that you're missing a bacteria that would prevent this from happening to you, and we can put it back into your body. So there are really important medical reasons for this, and as crazy as it sounds, it's not as sort of dark science fiction as I'm enjoying hyping it up to be, because it just is so much fun to talk about it that way.
Well, I love
that they created a robot though that has a predatorial attitude as opposed to a being more of a prey animal. You know, I guess maybe predators are more active as opposed to reactive, and maybe that's why they created it that way. But
well, they didn't do it on purpose. This is what the bacteria did, and this is what's so fascinating about it. So this is how the bacteria got together and decided it needed to feed. They didn't program it to be a predator. Which is one of the scariest but coolest parts of this, right? Because imagine putting that brain in, like, the MIT DARPA cheetah robot that can run at 50 miles an hour and looks like an actual predator, right? And then tell it it's hungry, right? but that's just the way the mind of the bacteria worked, and that's what's so fascinating about this, is that it creates an actual organism that behaves in the way it needs to behave to do what it needs to do.
Well, I think the big question for our listeners is this: if our bacteria is in essence hacking us and has been for millennia, is the bacteria white hat? black hat or gray hat? that's the real question, and I'm afraid we're going to have to ask them to let us know on the discussion board and even in some email to us or on Twitter. Let us know what you think about that. I think this is one of those great conversation topics that I would love to hear more about from our Information Week community. Speaking of the Information Week community, we're very, very glad that you could join us today, and hope that if you're listening to this in a streaming on-demand format, that you'll consider being with us. Information Week Live happens live every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Today we've had a great panel and a great discussion going on here at InformationWeek.com. I want to run down our panelists and find out what you're going to be doing in the coming week. Kelly, let's start with you. What's on tap for you, and how can people follow you on social media to find out what you're doing on a day-to-day basis?
Well, chances are I'll be watching Microsoft, and so we're hoping to see they actually released what is reportedly the final build of Windows 10 this past week, but I'm expecting a few more changes before it launches in full, so I'll be watching out for those. And you can follow me on Twitter at Kelly Sheridan, that's KellySheridan 22.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. And we'll look forward
to
having you. Yeah, we'll look forward to having you back around the virtual table again frequently in the future.
Sounds great.
Well, another person we'd love to have with us around the big virtual table here at Information Week Radio Central is Sarah Peters. Sarah, what do you have your eye on? Are there things that we should be pre-frightened about? and how can people keep up with you on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's always hard to tell, but hopefully we won't have any more Adobe Flash zero-day vulnerabilities hitting next week, but there probably will be, so we'll be on the lookout for that. And we're looking forward to Black Hat, so there's definitely going to be more previews. That's going to be happening the first week of August, so it's right around the corner. And you can find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters. It's easy to remember, just no H.
And if you're not already following Kelly and Sarah, then you really should. As soon as this show is over, head over to Twitter and make sure you're following both of them. Now, someone else you really need to be following is, of course, Dave Wagner. And, Dave, I've got to ask, what is your gut bacteria telling you to do for the coming week?
Well, my gut bacteria just helped me write an article for Sunday on Reddit and its efforts to clean up its community. I give them some tongue-in-cheek and some serious suggestions on what they can do. And I had a really great conversation with the restaurant Elephant Bar, which is a regional restaurant mostly here on the West Coast, about some success that they're having with mobile marketing and geofencing that I found to be truly incredible. And I really hope you'll read that. That should be out Monday or Tuesday at the latest. And really good stuff there. So if you have any interest whatsoever in mobile marketing, I've got a really great story for you.
Outstanding. And what's your handle on the Tweety Pipes? How can people keep up with your...
At Geekend Dave, GEEKEND Dave, at Twitter.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. Now, as for me, I've got a piece coming up on Sunday as well. Mine is 9 really good reasons why Flash deserves to die.
Yay!
And you could only come up with 9?
Well, you know, there have to be some limits. And I wanted to leave room for the creativity from our community, because I'm sure that we're going to hear lots more reasons from the good folks who are out there in the Information Week community. I've recently had articles on both Fortran and COBOL, as well as one on HTML5, and would love to hear from listeners about which language or languages I need to tackle next. to do that, you're welcome to send me a direct message on Twitter. My handle there is KG4GWA. Thanks so much for being with us. You know, I tend to say that we could not and would not do this without you, our listeners, and it's true. We're glad you take the time to be with us, and we'll look forward to having you as part of our audience next week and every week. Well, for everyone here at Information Week Radio, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you next week.